Hi, everybody. My name is Kylie Maddox.
And, thanks, everybody, for coming out. This is such a special convention. And, it's totally where my heart is. They asked me, everything's been put on hold with this whole COVID and all that stuff. So I was asked quite some time ago to speak, and it's like, well, sure, And, just give me a topic. I either have an opinion or I can talk on it, even if it'll just flow. And am I an addict? It's like, of course, I can totally talk on that because I totally am. And, just to give you a little backstory, I was born in a life of active addiction. I grew up bellying up to a bar, and, since I've been in diapers, and that's all I knew. And from there, it just blossomed on its own. I didn't know how anybody else lived until I went to school. I didn't know, it was always like Saturday night at the fights every day. There might have been food, there might not have been food. The place might have been clean, it might not have been clean, but it was just the life I was born into, and that's all I knew until I started visiting other people's homes. And I found out really quickly that my life that I had been born into, that I had been living, was really quite different. And I'm not an addict because I was born into that, but I understand it because I was born into it, And but what I did as a result of that realization that not everybody lives like that is I developed behavior, and part of my behavior was being able to separate myself in different aspects of my life. And, school was one thing, Girl Scouts was one thing, gymnastics was one thing, home life was one thing, and they didn't meet. They were always really separate. And I did really good at juggling all that, And no matter where I went, and I can't really say that I was a chameleon. I hear that a lot in the rooms. I think I was just me and just another facet of who I am. And, I was one of those addicts that, started early and never stopped. I guess I was like about 11 years old when I picked up for my very first time with intention. At 13, I had already been arrested. By 15, I was dancing on tables, closing bars. And all the time, I was still going to school. Not only was I going to high school, I was always also going to vocational school and keeping all those lives really, really, really separate. So at 17, when I graduated from high school, I also had a 2-year vocational diploma. And what am I going to do now? What am I going to do now? And if you can't tell by the accent, I'm from Pittsburgh. I know. Hey, Pittsburgh's in the house. Didn't get clean in Pittsburgh. I used in Pittsburgh. So thanks very much, guys, for holding it. Hold that. They'll cover you there. But what was I going to do? I had a job, and I was kind of getting nowhere. I didn't have the opportunity to have the choice of going to college. That wasn't in the cards. I used to go to Pitt and Penn State and party, come home, and I would work my 9-to-5 job. And, my choice was, pretty much going to go work for the steel mills, which was a lot of, what a lot of people did. They went to the factories, and that's where the money was. And I ended up in Fort Lauderdale on spring break, and I called my mom and I said I wasn't coming home, and I stayed, and I had just turned 19. I put on a bathing suit. It was sex, drugs, rock and roll, and I was good for the next 20 years, Some of it I actually remember, but I went surfing. I started working on boats, and it was the late 70s and all through the 80s, and I was just all up and down the coast of Florida and just partying, The guys took care of me, and I went to work hard. I worked hard. I partied hard. I just kind of lived the life, And always fell through the cracks. Anytime anything went down, I had already just left. I had already dismissed it, and I thought I had it going on, because I didn't pay the consequences, So I didn't think I had a problem. And as far as an addict, That didn't even come into conversation. And I was always well supplied. The guys in my life always took care of that, you know. And then I always worked hard. And, you know, being in marinas, you know, I was tipped very well, you know. And then I started working as a freelance artist. I was the gal that worked in a bathing suit sitting on the back of a boat. And so, you know, I really called my own shots. I didn't have to show up at a certain time. If my day started at noon, I started at noon, you know. If I couldn't start that day, I showed up the next day. Everybody just put up with me, you know. And I didn't have a problem because I didn't pay any of the consequences. And little by slowly, all those things that I said I would never do, I started doing. And then I made it okay. You know, because growing up in the environment that I grew up in, I learned how to adapt. I learned how to accept behavior. I learned how to tell myself it was okay or it didn't matter. All the while I was telling myself I don't matter. But I didn't know that. I didn't know it at the time. And so, like I said, all those things that I said I would never do, one by one. It wasn't like this big explosion. I wasn't walking the boulevard. I didn't have, like I said, the black and white consequences, jails, institutions, and death. That wasn't my story, you know? But the erosion of my spirit, yeah, that was my story until I had nothing left. You know, like I said, the guys always took care of me. I used to go surfing, ended up marrying one of those guys. And 15 years later, it was a life or death situation. Somebody was going down and I had to get out. And totally the right thing to do was to leave. But what happened at that point was that spiral that started when I was 11 and 13 and 15, and all the while people were telling me, Patty, you're out of control. I got this. Patty, you really got to settle down. I got this, because I got up and I went to work. I took care of you. I paid your bills. That was me. And so I didn't have a problem. And so, you know, after I left my first husband, never divorced the guy, you know, I just left, like, you know what we do, we pack our bags, we leave, you know, it'll just take care of itself. I lived in isolation for about a year, you know. I passed out, I regained consciousness, I went to work, I came home, I passed out, because I lived in fear. I was looking over my shoulder. I lived in fear for like a solid year, and then, you know, one day I told myself, this is worse. This is worse than what I left, you know? And, you know, the abuse was so bad that the fear was so instilled in me, and the worse it got, the more I used, the worse it got. I had nothing but a shell of me left, and then I put myself into a self-made prison. You know, it was just so much worse, and that is not living. That is just a life. It was an existence, and I didn't even know. And so we did what we do, you know. I found myself a stool someplace, and I started scouting the territory and finding my new friends. And you know how we can always recognize what we want to do and who our new friends are? Didn't take me long to get right back into the circuit of things. And, you know, I didn't have to sell my jewelry. I didn't have to sell myself. I didn't have to, like, give up all my stuff. Because the guys always took care of me. I always had a boyfriend. I always, you know, there was always somebody. I didn't have the main rollers, two-bit dealer. That was good enough for me. As long as you had enough for both of us, I was all set. And, those things that I said I would never do, it started speeding up. And then my life, I started missing days. I started missing weekends. I started missing weeks. I started missing months. And I don't know what happened to them, you know? Like, I was still keeping everything going on, but it's like, what day is it? I had no idea. And until it got so dark and so lonely and so cold, and all the while, it never occurred to me that I had a drug problem. I had a lifestyle problem. I had a friend problem. It wasn't a drug problem. And I found myself at one point, and this is like totally where God comes into my life and always has been. I was always saved for something else. I was always meant for something so much more. I just didn't know. And I looked at myself in the mirror one day because I still had an apartment. And I was a month, you know, a little over a month late for rent. But isn't that why you pay first, last, and security? And, I still had an apartment. And and I still had 2 cents left in my bank accounts. And I still had my jewelry. And I still had my business. And I still had my vehicle. Now, my vehicle, you know, when it rained inside. But it still ran. And, you know, if I wanted AC, I just wound out the windows, you know. And I still had my stuff because the people I was circling myself with lived out of a grocery bag or on somebody else's couch, you know. And so that morning I looked in the mirror and I didn't even recognize the reflection that was looking back at me. And I didn't know what happened. I didn't know what happened. And I never knew anybody that stopped using. Quite frankly, I didn't associate with anybody that didn't use. What's the point? You know? And I think I kind of got scooped up and carried to my phone, and I started making phone calls, and I ended up with a phone number for Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous for the helpline, and I looked at both those numbers, not knowing nothing, and I said, alcohol is one of my drugs, I'm calling Narcotics Anonymous, and like I said, I never knew anybody that recovered. I never knew anybody that stopped. I was the friend that when you got, you know, locked up and you were getting released, I was the friend that would pick you up. And, you know, with a little help from your friends, you know, I brought something with me and, you know, took care of business. And so I get this gal on the phone with the helpline, and this was back when you had a beeper and they would call back, and I wasn't sure what I was going to pick up because it wasn't call waiting and there wasn't caller ID, and so do I answer, do I not answer, what do? And I pick it up, and this chick Rosemary calls me, and she goes, I'm from the helpline from Narcotics Anonymous, and like I'm dying at this point, you know, because at 6 a.m. I flushed everything I had down the toilet, you know, and I'm shaking and baking, and she calls me back, and I'm broken. I'm broken. I'm spent. I've been up for days. I'm a mess, and I'm by myself, and like I said, it is about as dark as it could get, and she starts talking to me, and you know, most of the time when you work the helpline, you get a parent calling for a husband or a kid or somebody out of town looking for a meeting. Every now and then, you get somebody like me, and she asked me if, you know, do you need treatment? I'm like, ooh, no, I don't need treatment. That's being locked up. I don't need to be incarcerated. And so she goes, well, I can meet you at a meeting tonight. And at this point, it wasn't even lunchtime. And I'm like, no, man, if somebody doesn't do something right now, I was so desperate. Somebody's got to come and get me now. And she goes, do you think you could do a noon meeting? And at that point, I got clean in Hollywood, Florida. It's a South Broward area. Of, you know, the South Florida region, and she told me where this meeting was, and I said, yeah, I'll go to this, and I'm promising this stranger that I never met that I would go to this meeting, so I hang up, and I start pacing, and it's like, you know, Narcotics Anonymous, those are drug addicts, you know, and I'm just a little out of control, you know, and so I say I flushed everything, you know, we get rid of everything, but there always is a little something to take the edge off. So I took the edge off. I don't know where I found the edge, but I took the edge off. And I show up at this new meeting. It's this church, right? I go into this church in South Broward, and there's these ladies there with, you know, doing the little thrift store. I guess they got pretty good at seeing who needs the meeting upstairs and who's coming shopping, you know? So they just point, and I go upstairs. And, you know, you go to meetings, and, you know, everybody's kind of talking with each other, and, you know, hey, how you doing, and all kind of friends and everything, and there's a circle, and I sit down in the circle. I didn't sit in the circle. I sat near the circle, and so, first of all, I circled the joint, you know. I'm trying to stop crying, you know, like all of a sudden, I'm a mess, and so, you know, I'm trying to keep it together, trying to keep it together. It's like, oh my gosh, so I find this table that has the literature, and I go over, start fluffing the literature, and don't let anybody see me cry, don't let anybody see me fall apart. I told this stranger that I'd do the meeting. I could do an hour, anybody could do time, I could do an hour, I'm out of here. And so this guy comes over to me, and hands me a tissue and a white book, and he says, here, you never have to be alone. N-A, never alone. So I take this white book, and he shows me where to follow along with the readings, and asks me if I'm going to sit down, and I says, sure. I'm not going to sit in the circle. I sat near the circle. And so I started following along, just trying to keep it together. Well, guess what the subject of that meeting was? The IB pamphlet, or the IP pamphlet, Am I an Addict? And so what they did was, everybody was like reading a question and passing it on. And it got to me, and at this point, I'm broken. I'm a mess. I'm trying to hang on. I start to fall apart. And I'm like, I can't do this. I can't answer these questions. And they saw, it was like me and some other girl right off the street. And they changed the course of that meeting from Am I an Addict to explaining really why they were. And, you know, and some of it I could relate to and some of it I couldn't. But after the meeting, we circle up. And I got my first hug in NA. And guess what? I felt something. I hadn't felt anything in a really, really long time. But I felt something. My life had gotten to good or bad, and it felt good. And so a couple of the gals stuck with me after the meeting. And, you know, again, I'm promising, making these promises. Don't use, and come back to that very room that night. Can I do that? And so I'm like, sure, I'll be there, you know? And they gave me their phone numbers. They said, if you feel like using, call us, but we will meet you here. So I went home, and I called that girl from the helpline because she had given me her phone number. And I told her, I said, you're going to be really proud of me. And she goes, it's not about me being proud of you. It's about you being proud of you. I had never heard anything like that in my entire life. Nobody ever said that. It was all about what could I do for you. My whole life, and I just, it just took me back. And so I told her what these gals said. There's another meeting that night at 7:30 at that church, and she goes, I'll meet you there. So I get to the church, and apparently there was a, you know, nice little carload of treatment people or whatever, lots of people to hide behind. So I did. Can't even tell you what that meeting was all about. At this point, I'm a mess. I mean, I'm crashing bad. And so it got time for, you know, to do the key tags. And they said, does anybody want to come and pick up a white chip? And so I was kind of pushed through the masses up to the front. I got my white chip and I got another hug. And again, you know, felt good. I felt something. I mean, numb would have been a step up. I felt something. And I got that white chip. And a couple of people got together. I met my first sponsor at that meeting. I got some phone numbers. And they kind of took me hostage and gave me a list. And this is where you're going tomorrow. And this is our phone numbers. And this is where we'll meet you. And what, you know, I mean, it was great. You know, so I went home and I'm promising all these people I'm showing up. And I'm falling apart. I mean, I'm a mess. And I started falling, you know, the guidance, whatever, I was like a zombie. I mean, like the Walking Dead. And I showed up. But what I did was I took a piece of paper and I stapled it to that white chip. And it's still stapled to that white chip. And it's 9:06:95, 6 a.m. And I haven't taken that paper off. And I'm here. And I'm here because I am an addict. And what I do is I read that IP every year or so to remind myself why I stay. I never want to get to the point that I'm well, because I sit down and I pay attention. I may not speak, but I watch everything. I listen to not what you're saying, but how you're saying it and how you're living. You know, I pay attention to people that go out. I make phone calls. If I don't see somebody, I chase them down. And you know, this is the year that I turned 25 years clean. This is also the year that's exactly how long I used. I hit that equal part. I never thought ever I would get to that point. And you know why I stay? Because I stay to be a woman present in recovery that is available to those gals coming in, just like those people were available to me when I came in. I don't ever want to think that I've arrived. I know it's about the journey, but knowing about the journey and actually taking it are two different things. You know, I learned early on, very old school, you jump into service. My first service commitment, I was 2 weeks clean, and I was stuck in literature their area service, and I've never been without a service commitment since. Some of them were very, you know, labeled and on the front lines, really not my thing, but it was just my turn, and I showed up and I did it. No matter how many times I wanted to take my ball and leave the sandbox and just bail, I finished out. And most of the time, I'm behind the scenes. And if you've been around forever, I am so glad that you're still here. And if you're being around for a few days and this is your first time, guess what? Even though relapse is a part of many people's stories, it doesn't have to be a continued or a new part of yours. You know, I'm here to say I'm here with one white chip that doesn't make me any better or anything else from anybody else. It's just my story, and I'm here to share that. But what I'm here to say is I joined the No Matter What Club right from the beginning, and I latched on. I didn't do everything perfectly. You get a list of these suggestions, and some of them I'll get around to. Still working on a few of them. But you know what? Don't use No Matter What. Regular meeting attendance, and at the beginning it was 90 meetings in 90 days. I was blessed with a recovery community that I could go to several meetings in one day if that's what I needed. Well, guess what? I was about 5 years clean, and we got transferred to the west coast of Florida, and there was one meeting a day. The next meeting was 50 miles away. We were real small. There wasn't a whole lot of women, and they latched onto us, but guess what? I latched onto them like the life force. And I have watched my area grow leaps and bounds since I have been there, and I'm so super proud of my area and being an active member and part of that. Because what I receive is so much more than I could ever give. You know, I don't give to get. But I know as a result of me giving, I do receive, and I am here, and I am staying. And I got to tell you, we're all like trying to survive and come out of whatever this whole like last year or whatever was. And for me, it was a complete reset, you know, and a reconnect. And, you know, jumping on like to Zoom, like so many of us found this new technology. Some of it is, you know, we've been dabbling with it. Now it was like a, you know, part of our everyday life. But some of the people I connected with in my midst of, you know, isolating in my living room were people I met through service and conventions, and this is one of those conventions that I met a lot of people. But I do service, and it rubs you raw. And don't think just because you have clean time that you're better, that you're exempt, or you got it all going on. I am super sensitive. I take everything personal. I fall apart at a leaf, you know? And when somebody is crying or bleeding, I bleed for you, you know? And, sometimes, you know, everything could be happy, joyous, and free, and then, you know, the wind blows and my feelings get hurt, and I feel so broken, and you know what? It's just my stuff, and I've got to look at it as it isn't personal. People come into my life as teachers. I need to be grateful, and I need to be grateful because what can I learn? And if I can learn and remain teachable, I can better serve not only the fellowship, but the women that seek me out. You know, so am I an addict? Yeah, and I'm always going to be one. But you know what I see with people that are just like us, addicts? We are really, really special. I mean, you listen to some of the ways and means that people share in meetings. And I want to tell you, genius. You know, if we could just do it for good, you know? I mean, wouldn't the world just be a better place? And look at what we do with this convention and all the profits for it. We're sharing the message and we're sharing hope and we're leading by example because guess what? We're still here. I didn't get my needs met, pack my bags and leave. Sometimes I wanted to run, but I never left. And I try to make myself available. And guess what? I'm not for everybody. But for the ones that seek me out, and as long as that relationship works, You know, it's good because they told me, you know, way back in the beginning, sponsorship's a two-way street. And since I've been clean and I joined this no matter what club, I've had financial gain, I've had financial loss. I've had property gain, I've had property loss. I've lost loved ones. I'm coming up on an anniversary next week of my sister who died less than a year after my mom. My entire birth family is gone. I'm an orphan. But you guys took me on. You're my family. You know, I'm an addict. I'm part of anywhere I go on this globe and identify myself, I belong. Whether I feel it or not, what I know is that truth. And so, you know, as much as I had a laugh when they asked me if I would speak on this subject, am I an addict? From day one, I didn't even realize it as I entered the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous till standing here at this podium sharing with you. There is no doubt in my mind. And guess what? I didn't come here to get clean. And as I got clean, I didn't realize really specifically why I was here until I was driving down the interstate into Miami and there was a billboard and it said, are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Yeah. And for that, I'm grateful I'm here, and I'm grateful for all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Michael.